Well, hello, everybody, and jingle bells! Merry Christmas! We are officially in Christmas week. Hi, everybody. This is Around the Table. I'm Jennifer English, and I am thrilled to be welcoming you to my table here in the city of gastronomy, festooned with lights, celebrating La Posada, celebrating in all the most joyous ways, with food and friends and family. The flavors of the season and festivities all bring us joy. I am thrilled on this eve of the Christmas week to be sharing this time with you and some of our friends. We're going to take you around the cultures that make up this community to talk about what Christmas tastes like at your house. What this week will taste like at your house if you celebrate Hanukkah, which I believe starts tonight. Tonight or Monday night? I have to figure that out. But I think it's tonight. And I want to make sure that we all get a chance to share our traditions and be inspired by our friends who do and taste and make something other than what we make. It's not cultural appropriation. It's conviviality. It's hospitality. I've been a bit of an orphan this year in a couple of instances at holiday time, and I've been touched by the invitations I've received to join families and friends at their tables and share their traditions. It's really bringing joy to life in a whole new way for me as I get ready to welcome you all back. So as we wrap up this year, and we look at the hour ahead, our goal is to make sure that if there are any things we can do to be useful or helpful, inspiring or directional, educational, and collaborative, we're here to do that. It's the way that we can make a gift to you this holiday season. We're going to talk to friends from Puerto Rico in a Puerto Rican tradition of something called a Christmas feast. Have you ever had a Christmas feast in that tradition? Well, we're going to talk about that. The word feast is something that features prominently because at this time of year, it's the greatest, grandest celebration of the year. Another culture that uses the term feast is the Italian culture, where the Feast of Seven Fishes is served traditionally on Christmas Eve. We're going to talk about the Feast of Seven Fishes, the kinds of things that you might serve, the kinds of things you might be inspired to serve, how you can interpret those things, how you can go to find the best seafoods in town, where you would go. We'll reach out to our friends for that as well. We're also going to talk to our good friend Alan Williams, who was known as the movie professor for our film school segment, because as we gather, and this week is a big, long week, some people have the whole week off and preparations have probably begun. Tamale making has been underway for a couple of days in some houses, and some places, Tamale Day starts today. So if one of the things you do is you gather as a family and you put movies and music on, I'd love to hear from you what your favorite holiday movies are. And we're going to turn to our friend, the professor, Alan Williams, the movie professor, in just a little bit for an inspiration of a great holiday movie to see that has its roots right here in Tucson, Arizona. And more than anything else, we're going to have you join us. 520-790-2040, 520-790-2040. That's our phone number to call in. You are listening to AM 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. You can find us on the World Wide Web at kvoi.com. And I would love to hear from you, 520-790-2040. In another tradition, the French tradition, one of the classic dishes you might serve at Christmas time is the Bûche de Noël. And I found a fantastic version of the Bûche de Noël at Le Rendezvous restaurant. I was there this week talking with the founding chef of the restaurant, Jean-Claude Berger. He came in personally from his retirement to manufacture, to make, to craft these extraordinary loaves of love. They look like a log. They've got this wonderful sponge cake, and they're decorated with meringue mushrooms and they're really just such a very typical, traditional, wonderful flavor of the holiday season. And you can try it for yourself at Le Rendezvous, which is located at Alvernon and Fort Lowell. And if you wanted to give someone a gift of a gift certificate, I've been talking about gift certificates a lot because people have been calling me, texting me, Facebook messaging me, and asking if they were going to do gift certificates, where would I send them? And I have five that I've chosen for this holiday season. The first is, I love what the good folks at El Charro are doing. They're kind of doing a spin on their Christmas in July, where if you spend $100, you get $100 in eating in the El Charro restaurants with their gift certificates. And their $100 gift certificate gets you a passport with different $25 gift certificates or coupons for each of their restaurants, so you get to go around and try all of them. And throughout the show, we're going to be telling you about our other favorite gift certificate places, including Le Rendezvous, where I would strongly suggest, if you're going to give a gift certificate to somebody, make sure you tell them what to get when you go there. So don't just say, here's $25 at Le Rendezvous. Say, here's $25 at Le Rendezvous. Go and have a romantic lunch and make sure you get a Grand Marnier souffle. That, to me, is magical and really personal. And it just takes it that next step of why you love going to that place and why you're giving someone the gift of a visit to the place that you love. We're going to go to the phones now and welcome Chef Justin Nilsson and his family. They have been preparing for their Puerto Rican Christmas feast. My understanding is that they've been digging a cooking pit, like they've made their own fire pit for roasting. Part of this tradition, it's extraordinary, and I'm thrilled that he's going to join us now to tell us a little bit more about how his culture, his family, and his flavors come around once a year and celebrate Christmas. And I'll say Feliz Navidad to Chef Justin Nilsson. How are you?
Hey, very good. How are you?
I love that you're joining me again.
Yeah, well, this time I dragged my mom into it because she will not botch any of the pronunciations of what we're making.
Let me properly introduce Chef Carmen. It's so nice to have you on the show, both of you. And, of course, you two remind me of another mother and son duo. Of course, Zarela Martinez, who is from this region of the world, from Agua Prieta, Mexico, whose own mother was a cookbook author, who herself is an extraordinary PBS host and cookbook author and restaurateur, Zarela Martinez, and her son, Aaron Sanchez, who is well-known for being a restaurateur and cookbook author, but a host on a number of Food Network shows, and most recently, just in the last few weeks, published his memoirs, which are being, it was announced, turned into a TV series. The rights were purchased. So this story continues. I love the idea of sons and mothers in Latin traditions in the kitchen. Carmen, talk to me about that idea that it's not just the domain of one's daughters and that it's really a family tradition in the culture of Puerto Rico where you come from.
Oh, absolutely. The one thing I prided myself on is making sure that my three sons could all cook, take care of themselves. So they were always in the kitchen with me. I don't think it's just the domain of females in the kitchen. In my family, there were three brothers and six sisters, and trust me, we all took our turns in the kitchen.
Talk about the Puerto Rican Christmas feast. What was it like growing up?
Well, with that many people, that was just our children. I mean, there were nine of us in the family, but then all the cousins and the aunts and the uncles. So the feast was a grand feast. Lots of people around, multiple tables. So always plenty of food. Everybody would bring their favorite dishes. My mom was an amazing cook, and certainly she made sure that no one went hungry at our tables.
What are the elements that make a traditional Puerto Rican Christmas feast?
Definitely, the pork is central to it. My father would spend days creating this fire pit to roast a pernil, which is a piglet, that they would slaughter and prepare the men with plenty of beer, I'm sure, and rum as they were preparing this, but it would cook for hours slowly over a pit that was churned. And it was quite the event. It was fun to watch them doing it, and certainly great tasting food, I would say, because it's so slow roasted. But the pernita is central to it.
And do you have the same side dishes around that are really once a year side dishes, like in an American Thanksgiving, where you have like a main, you know, trophy protein like the turkey, you're talking about the piglet, and then the side dishes are very Christmas only side dishes?
No, not really. The coquito is probably, that's a drink.
Yeah.
But rice is a main staple in Puerto Rican meals. It's rice at every meal usually, you know, lunch and dinner meals. It's not that it's just served at this time, but there is something
about the abundance of it that makes it special.
Exactly, the abundance of it. But arroz con gandules, which is a red rice that's made with pigeon peas, which I always think is so interesting that they're called pigeon peas, because in Old San Juan, there is a park called the Pigeon Park, you know, so I'm not sure where the peas got their name, but that is a really flavorful rice. It's unlike white rice or unlike, you know, Spanish rice, as some Americans might know Spanish rice, which is kind of tomato soppy and stuff like that.
So it's got a little really yellow, goldeny, reddish, orangish tint to it. When the Christmas rice comes out with the pigeon peas, it almost sounds more like, you know, rice and peas in the Jamaican tradition, or, and again, out of the Caribbean. Does it have some roots and origins in that? Or is it even like the Italian tradition of like rice and peas, a BCBC? Is it more done with herbs? Is it more done with spices? Is it more done with stock? Where does the flavor all come from?
Well, I brought with me from Connecticut what Justin refers to as the liquid gold. you can spend hours making this. It's tons and tons and tons of garlic that's crushed. It's made with, you know, parsley, cilantro, culantro, all of those, you know, those peppers and stuff like that. So you make this mash of this amazing salt and pepper, peppery garlic that we will slather all over the pork roast. But it is also, you know, a couple of tablespoons of that in the rice is what really makes it flavor. It's like a sofrito.
What do you actually call it?
We call it especias or sofrita. Sofrito is when you saute, like you would saute onions and celery and stuff like that. But we use achote, which is the thing that gives, what's it called in English? I forget what it's called in English.
Annatto seed.
Yeah. It gives it that red color. It's a pretty kind of reddish yellow color.
Flory aromatic quality, I've noticed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what is the actual potion that liquid gold technically called?
It's called especias. Especias molidas, which is ground spices altogether, which includes, you know, those herbs and includes the garlic, the salt, the pepper.
It's like the Puerto Rican equivalent of curry or something, because everybody has a slight variation, and it's why grandma's was grandma's, I think, right?
Right.
Now,
you put it in a number of things, soups, you know, the rice, you can slather it on any number of meats and stuff like that. It's just very potent, very, very...
It's just good.
Now, how different is it than the commercially available product called Sazon?
Yeah.
Way different.
Because
lots more flavor.
Yeah.
That's more flavor. It's like the difference between, you know, Starbuck pesto and the pesto you really make with lots of love.
Right. And you just, and you put it on everything.
And a lot of it.
And it makes anything. My old roommate and I, Michelle, who's joining us also for Christmas, she's coming down. But when we were in Vegas, every now and then we would, when money was tight or something like that, the first thing we would go to is to make a big pot of pollo guisao and red rice and beans. And you know, it's just, cause it's a fantastically inexpensive meal, a simple meal to make, but it just has like all the comfort you need. And when you're stressed out because you don't have a lot of money or something, you got a lot of work going on, it would just be like, that was comfort. and because we always like we had we the asbestos was a bit more plentiful back then, and now it's kind of like we've reached the end of our gold mine here with which is why my grandma taught me how to make it, but it won't be quite the same.
So when you're making a batch of this, is it like making an all-day affair? Like it, you get all the ingredients and you just like spend the whole day making, and then you make a batch for a whole year or a batch for a season?
Yeah, it was like an Amex commercial. It was me and my grandma, and we drove all over the place getting all the ingredients and stuff, and then we were sitting there. And the funny thing was is that after we were done making, I mean, it's just labor-intensive to make the quantities that she made it in. And we actually didn't even make very much. We made a smaller amount, which still took a long time. But the number of ingredients that went into it, like I always thought it was like this carefully guarded secret recipe. And then I started laughing at her. So it's like, Grandma, there's not a lot in this. It's there. She was like laughed at me. She goes, it takes a lot of work to do this. I was like, I guess.
But it's one of those magically simple things.
It's a magically simple thing that the ingredients independently would never lead you to thinking that it tasted like how it does. But when it comes together, it transforms into something different. I think that's what's special about it.
Before we let you go, and I'm so grateful to have some time with you to share with the audience what your tradition is. You made a fire pit. You cured it with a big fire, and you're going to do more with it. Will you talk about how integral that fire element is to achieving and coaxing the flavors from the ingredients you're cooking?
Well, I love live fire cooking. So I think it was more to do with sort of wanting to add that sort of authentic quality to all the meals that we're going to be making this week. Because I think just nothing tastes better and more of the earth than when you cook something over, you know, a live fire, nice glowing coals and stuff. So anyway, the idea sprang from the last time when we were out here. I noticed that we had a lot of some good building material in the back area left over from earlier construction projects. So I just kind of put it together, and it worked out really cool.
So
it worked great. We made a mesquite roasted chicken last night, and it was just out of this world. Fantastic.
And you've already got the piglet ordered, and you've got the other items ordered?
We're getting those details together today. That's what we've got a lot of errands to get done today.
I was over at the Restaurant Depot, and I saw some of those special ingredients.
That's where we're thinking of heading today, actually. So.
Oh, can I come play with you?
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Listen, I want to thank you both. And my last question is, on the sweet side, is there one traditional sweet that you make in the Puerto Rican culture for the Christmas feast?
Well, we do, but it's we're going to diverge over to Cuba a little bit. So traditionally, a Puerto Rican flan comparatively is a bit sort of a more eggier kind of custard, which just sort of has a weird texture in your mouth, which like mom and I never really cared for. And a flan, if you know, you start out with actually putting a layer of caramelized sugar on the bottom of a pan, and then you put this custard on it. And so when you bake and cool it and flip it, it flips out, and it sort of becomes a self-saucing creme caramel. But the Cubans, they put some cream cheese in it. So when it bakes, it has a bit more of a cheesecake quality. And we have always, in our family, liked that that version a little better. So we were going to make that.
And you know,
and then there's
we can't forget the poquito.
Yeah, but my friend Michelle was the one that knew how to make that the best. And because she made some last year, if you remember, when we were in
Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas together. And it was just, she only brought it a treasured tiny little bit because she didn't have much left over. So we're hoping to crank out a bunch.
And we should say that coquito is kind of like a coconut horchata eggnog combo platter.
Yeah, it's like eggnog to the totally other level.
And it's elevated and frothy and creamy and wonderful.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you both so very much for spending some time on your Christmas holiday with us. And I hope that everything is delicious, and may your family and friends enjoy true conviviality around the table, fellowship, and love. Thank you for sharing yours with me and the audience.
Thank you.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad. We're going to be taking a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about an extraordinary event that's taking place on the other side of the new year for somebody and something that is near and dear to our hearts. It's something we're grateful for. And for me, it's like a little gift. 520-790-2040 is the phone number here. This is Around the Table. You're listening to AM 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Live from the City of Gastronomy, Jingle Bells. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Around the Table. Live from the City of Gastronomy, Jingle Bells. It's Christmas time. And as we celebrate this beautiful festive season, we celebrate the end of the decade. It's 2019, a week away from 2020. We are looking ahead and looking forward. And as we celebrate with conversations with our friends about the food from cultures that include feasting, as we celebrate the year that was, some people had a challenging year. And they say, well, why would we have a feast if it was such a challenging year? And of course, I will always say, when things are challenging, it means we're growing the most, we're learning the most, and we should be the most grateful for the things that are the hardest, not just the things that seem most abundant and plentiful and blessed. You see, the hard stuff is the blessing, and sometimes that's the hardest lesson to learn of all. But it all ties together, and 2020 and the decade ahead holds so many promises for us. A little later on in the show, we're going to have the movie professor, the film school director of education himself, Alan Williams, is going to be joining us. We're going to talk about the Feast of Seven Fishes a little later on. But first, we are going to welcome a very dear friend of mine. She's an Akashic Records healer, teacher, broadcaster, writer, and she believes, as I do, that everyone can access the healing methods that she teaches about. She's the author of numerous books that have been extraordinarily well reviewed and well received, including Ions of Manifestation, The Universal Conscious Self, and her most recent collaborative effort, The Cosmic Soul, Akashic Records, Journey of a Mystic. She is my friend. She's calling us from Canada. She joins us now because she is coming to Tucson, Arizona to do an incredible workshop on the other side of the new year when we need her the most, to tell us what it is and why we need it and how her gift to us this holiday season is this opportunity to learn and enrich our awakening. My good friend, Teza Zalcita, she joins us now. Welcome, my friend.
Hello.
Hello, beautiful angels.
Hello, sweetheart. Oh, my goodness. What a beautiful time to speak with you.
You regularly.
Happy solstice.
Happy solstice. I am thrilled to have you on for the solstice. It means a lot. Before we get into Akashic Records and everything else, because it is the 21st, let's tell everybody what this means.
Pardon me, sorry.
Because it is the solstice, because it is the 21st, tell everyone what that means.
Yes. Well, it is a huge shift. We're diving deep into the shadows, and which is the light is. I'm seeing like a deep well. You know, when you're thirsty for the gift of wisdom, and you're trying to reach to that bottom. And there is no water to be found in the desert, in the drought of your dark night of the soul. And here you are going deep and deeper into your soul's revelation. And here comes the light at the end of the tunnel, at the end of the deep well. This is the time to truly be in your centered stillness. Like, even the chaos is around you, find that space of sacred communication, listening. It's actually listening that we are now being called for.
Talk to me a little bit about the fact that this very busy season is crackling with energy and hospitality, and people are excited and running around, and you could in some ways describe it as a certain happy chaos. How important is it for people to find a certain moment or bit of stillness in this crazy time, in this crazy happy time?
Yes, yes. I feel we are in a kind of like a, it's a paradox. You know, it's Christmas time to celebrate Christ-like consciousness because we are shifting into the golden era, the golden light, the liquid golden light that is being given to us by the cosmos. But the mundane, the people that are not awakened, are so busy, consumed by material and not really seeing the precious gift. It's the time to renew your contracts, your soul's agreements with your divine self. It is the essence of gift giving is the time, the energy. It is now the relationship with the universe, the cosmos. And when you've developed that relationship with your faith, then everything else will follow. Like, we are so blinded by these festivities. It doesn't mean that you're not going to celebrate, but you are going to celebrate deeper than what the material, the gift giving is. I actually told my girlfriends, they're inviting me for Christmas party. I said to them, please don't buy me a gift because I refuse to go into the materialism of the celebration. And truly, for me, this is a crucial time for meditation, to pray for our collective. And I wasn't even aware, you know, I'm not plugged into the society. I woke up, and the first thing I see was impeachment. So apparently, Trump was impeached, which I had no clue. So I'm like, wow. So this is so amazing that it is now the awakening of the true essence of collective, what is important in these times of our lives.
Let's talk. You said three important things, and I know we've only got a limited amount of time with you because we're so grateful that you made time to be with us today. And I want to make sure we get to the fact that we've got an event coming up on the other side of the new year. But one of the most important things you said about our need for a deeper celebration through connecting, you mentioned our relationship with our fate. And of course, that speaks to your area of expertise and your mission and your contract. Will you talk about what that means and what we're talking about?
Okay. The relationship with your faith. I've seen a lot of people lost with their self-esteem, you know. They can't seem to find confidence in what's happening in their own world, in themselves. But you see, faith has to come from your relationship with the universe. When you have a strong faith to God or universe, then nothing can disturb you because you know it's all done. It's all is well. At the end of all this chaos, if we can only shift into that perfect divine timing for all of us, when you have that patience, strong faith that does not waver.
Right.
So when a person like my girlfriend is saying her mantra is, I believe in myself. Well, just that fact that you believe in yourself is already going astray. Because the faith should be, I believe in the universe. I believe you're declaring that the universe will take care of you, because yourself cannot take care of you.
Right.
Yourself is a default. It's the ego. The self is the ego. So when you let go of your ego and totally surrender to the faith, which is God or universe, then everything just comes as it's meant to be. It's a flow. It's called, you know, the flow, the passion. When you're in that creative zone, which is the Akashic record that holds your vibration in all timelines, when you access, you know, the key to your soul's journey.
I want to use an example for people to visualize, because this is how I have to make things kind of simple for me.
Yes, yes.
Because, you know, I have MS, so I've got lesions on my brain that make me kind of dopey sometimes, and I need to see things a certain way, because that's the path that my information needs
to
happen,
works.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we all have different minds, so
right.
It's like,
so
you know, when my mind works in patterns, so I see symbolically and metaphorically.
Yeah.
So like the archetype, right? So that's how I speak. So people can't fathom it, because they speak in a different language, right?
So the example I want to use is this. When we talk about there being something to trust in, like the universe, I like to believe that there are universal laws that have nothing to do with man, in the sense that we didn't come up with them. Whether we identify them or not, they exist. Whether we approve them or not, whether we expand them or not, the universal laws are the thing that we trust in. And to me, the universal laws can be defined by something as beautiful as the ocean. It can be defined as the beauty of a forest. But let's go to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody designed the ocean to be in that wonderful, harmonious balance that it exists in. There's harmony, there's symmetry, there's magic, there's mystery, there's divine order, there's sacred geometry. All of the things that make up any enterprise anywhere in the universe can be found in everything from the ocean to the forests to us. The human brain, the human heart, the human spirit. So when I think of it, I didn't need to come up with the ocean to understand that there's an ocean, right? And so it's really kind of simple to say, do I doubt that divine universal law with which all these things were created? No, you just have to have faith in it. So it makes it really easy for me to see. Or the desert, living here in the desert. There's a beautiful symmetry and harmony to the desert. So the energy of it is what it compels us. So we've got a couple of minutes left. Tell everybody about what the event is that's taking place on the other side of the new year, and what this sacred portal of time is.
So we chose February 8, 2020 to hold the Akashic Records activation. So I will be with you, and for those who are called to be initiated by the Lords of the Akashic Records, to understand deeper how your soul is having this journey and how you can see the bigger picture of your life. So that's going to be given, and also at the perfect timing of the gem trade, which are the crystals, and such a powerful time because the crystals are assisting and supporting our electromagnetic fields, the energies that are around us, that are supporting us. So it is so fabulous, very powerful activations of your soul, so you can traverse life with grace and ease and flow. So there is no suffering when you are in this space of bliss. So this is going to be phenomenal.
And
so I'm inviting, yes.
And we want to tell people that this is a day-long workshop for the Akashic Records activation, led by Teza Zilzita, author of the extraordinary best-selling book on Amazon Cosmic Soul,
Cosmic
the Akashic Soul. Records Journey of a Mystic. Very, mm-hmm. very briefly, because we've only got a minute with you before our next break, and I just want to mm-hmm. get this in. Please tell us, what are the Akashic Records?
The Akashic Records are the vibrations, the records of your soul. In many lifetimes that you have lived, and you're fractal. So, you know, for example, if you've lived a life with suffering or death of, you know, anything that is like blockage or drastic that you don't understand, because your soul has a fractal, an imprint of that vibration. So when you access your record, you're able to feel at home in your soul, to be more forgiving, to have compassion for yourself while you're going through that timeline of suffering, and how you can shift that into a bigger and higher vibration, higher consciousness. So the masters are actually working with us. I'm just a facilitator, a channel, but the masters who are the galactic beings, the ascended masters like Jesus, Medicine Buddha, all of these masters that have incarnated here are here assisting us because it is an eternal time. So it's recalibrating and remembering your soul's essence as a master of your soul.
Wow.
So, yeah, very sacred.
And there's something special about 2020 that makes this
yes.
a very fertile, opportunistic moment in time in the universe.
Yes. 2020 is a mirror, an activation of our highest past, our highest possibility, our highest potential. It also vibrates in the number 4, which is the elementals that holds the vibration of our planet. And our planet, Mother Earth, is ascending, accelerating in the frequency. So as we are the guardians, the children of Mother Earth, we need to accelerate in the same frequency so we're able to be here. So our goal is to anchor our golden light into Mother Earth so then we can manifest and help others in their ascension process. So we're all ascending.
Can you just tell everybody where the link to get more information about the event is and where can people go to sign up to participate? Because I understand there are less than 5 spots left for the workshop.
Yes, it's at Facebook. There's my Tessa Shalsitar. You can message me, and also at meetup.com, Akashic Records with Tessa, and with Jennifer, of course. You can contact Jennifer because
yes.
she's from Tucson. And
yes.
so, yeah, this is so exciting to meet you guys because we are all remembering our journey from the past and how we can support each other in this lifetime.
Teza Zalcita, thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, City. Thank you so much.
I love you. We'll talk soon. The professor is with us. Alan Williams is the professor of film school, and he's going to help us go through the holiday season with our eye on the big screen and how important movies play a role in our holiday season. He has recently gone to the cinema. He has been soaking it all in. Not only is he a professor of the fine art of film, but he's also a screenwriter, a director, a producer, an actor, and our number one source for information about how to really bring the tradition of sharing movies like those edible stories that they are to our tables and our life. He joins us now. Professor, welcome back.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm feeling a little insignificant after your last guest. I think I'm going to take some time for some introspection and I'm not quite sure how I'm going to follow that up, but I hope I've got something interesting to tell your audience.
No, but you know what you and I need to do? We need to watch The Matrix together in February just prior to that event. I think that's the way we tie it all together.
I'm in.
Okay. You went to the movies this week, and you saw something that I have had on my list for sometime, but a lot of people had it on their list. They've already gone to the movies, and they've made this one of the top movies in the state for the year at the Loft Cinema. What did you go see?
I went to go see the Linda Ronstadt documentary, The Sound of My Voice, which I think is probably required viewing for anyone who lives in Tucson to really understand our connection with Linda Ronstadt and the Ronstadt family. So,
and by virtue of that family, our culture and our sense of belonging in this place.
Yes, I think if you follow the history, and certainly they and particularly in the beginning and the end of the film, you get a really close understanding of the significance of the Ronstadt family in relation to the history of Tucson, and you really get a good feel for sort of the vibe of Tucson. And if you've lived here for any significant period of time, it all makes sense. But it's really interesting watching, kind of going through that chronology of her family's life in the area and their relation to Mexico and our relationship with Mexico. I think the Ronstadt family is a great example of the intricacies of that relationship.
One of the questions I had when I first heard this movie existed and was coming to town and was coming to the big screen, is there something about Linda Ronstadt's voice that represents her voice as the voice for all of us in this place?
Well, what you learn from the movie is, and I don't know that people truly appreciate her contribution in the music industry, particularly during an era where it was a male-dominated industry. And Linda Ronstadt really was a trailblazer. And I don't know that people really appreciate the role that she played. I don't know that they really appreciate what she brought to the table. Everyone thinks of her as a big star, but she really was a major, major star. And she, the thing is, as I say in the movie, she could sing anything.
Right.
So she just jumped into a variety of genres and sort of towards the end of her career came back to her roots and got into Mexican folk music and mariachi and that type of thing, and really brought it full circle. And she could do just about anything. And I think she opened up the audience for a variety of different genres of music that otherwise would not have listened if it weren't for her.
Do you think that of all the movies that one can see at any given moment here in Tucson, that for visitors, natives, and transplants alike, that seeing this movie says more about where we are on the planet than anything else we could watch?
Well, it certainly brings you home to gives you kind of a flavor of what Tucson's all about. But what I really enjoyed about this movie was there's three kinds of documentaries. There's documentaries where you they have a predetermined argument they want to make or a statement they want to make, and they sort of reverse engineer the message and tell it that way. Then there's you choose a subject and you have no idea where it's going, and you sort of document the journey, and the end is a surprise. And then there's the historical, chronological version where you simply tell a telling of history. You've kind of brought all together, and that's what this is. And what you quickly realize is that Linda Ronstadt's journey in the music industry over the decades is you get a chance to revisit a time in the music industry when probably one could argue was the richest time for American music, where the songwriter was king.
Mm-hmm.
Songs were sophisticated. They meant something. The lyrics were poetic. The music, the melodies were multi-layered. And Linda Ronstadt was a part of that. So it gets an opportunity for you to sort of revisit that, I think, that portion of the American music journey where I think things were probably the richest. And I would say that would coincide with the film industry at the same time also, but that's another discussion.
We'll have that discussion another day. And we will say that Linda Ronstadt's The Sound of My Voice is at the Loft Cinema. It literally plays every day, late morning. Is that true?
Yeah, this is probably running longer than any film that I've seen at the Loft in a long time.
Yep.
So I would say over the holidays, if you've got some, everybody's got some downtime, it really is a wonderful film. and it's full of Easter eggs. You have no idea the number of people she may or may not have found an unknown drummer at the time by the name of Don Henley and an unknown guitarist at the time by the name of Glenn Frey.
Wow.
And brought them together in her little band and then encouraged them to go on and form a band of their own that may or may not have been called the Eagles. And there are Easter eggs like that all through this thing where you had no idea that she touched so many people and was responsible for the careers of so many major league players in the film industry.
Alan Williams, you are the film professor. You are with us every week for Film School. I'm grateful to you. Have a happy, 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 happy holiday. Merry Christmas, Jingle Bells. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jennifer.
And in the couple of minutes that we have left, let's go talking about the Feast of Seven Fishes. This meal today typically consists of seven different seafood dishes. The tradition comes from southern Italy. And if you want to know the spot to get the very best seafood in town, well, I turned to my friend Michael Elefante. And he was telling me that his favorite places to go to for the best seafood in town, and we're thankful to him for helping us. They like the Whole Foods at Craycroft. I like the AJ's up at La Encantada. And he thinks the fries in Rita Ranch or in Marana do a nice job as well. As we wrap up this edition of the Christmas celebrations on Around the Table, please know how grateful I am for the gift of your time here with us. And when you get home, back where you are celebrating with your family and friends, do this for me. Hug your kids and count your blessings. Merry Christmas. May your holiday be blessed, safe, delicious, and joyful. May there be peace and music and love and laughter. And may we join on together next week for our year-end show. We're celebrating with Bubbles next week on Around the Table, live from the City of Gastronomy. Until then, Merry Christmas.